I'll be honest with you, and I actually respect, and you give me a lot to think about. And without being arrogant, at my echelon, it's not often I sit down with somebody and they say something that makes me think. But you've given me something to think about, and I genuinely, I'm going to think about it.
Yo, guys, season one of the George Janko Show is coming to an end. And honestly, from the bottom of my heart, I got to thank every one of you guys that have been watching. It is literally a dream. I'm waking up every single day, and I can't believe what we're doing. Season two is going to even be bigger. So make sure you hit that subscribe button, turn on your notifications, because we're coming in hot next year. Also, to celebrate the wrap of this season, we brought back the apparel Church Boy. So if you guys want to hit the link in the description, or you could go to theheartofdavid.co and get your stuff there. I love you guys. Enjoy. And have a great time. Also, I'm going to be reading comments, so comment down below. This is an exciting episode.
Let's make sure we don't disappoint, sir.
Oh, why would you f***ing do it? Just makes me so nervous now. All right, cool.
Put you on the spot.
Andrew.
Hello.
Welcome. Welcome to the George Janko Show, and thank you for ending season one. What a great season. What a great season. I brought my notes, bro, because I didn't want to come all the way to Romania and then, like, forget. So if you see me looking, don't get...
It's a long way to come, you know? It's kind of the forgotten part of the world. I'm not Romanian, but I certainly put Romania on the map. I don't feel like anyone talked about Romania ever.
Ever. And why did you come here?
I decided to leave the West. I can give you a very happy, funny answer. Do you want happy, funny, Andrew, or do you want serious, the world is ending, Andrew?
There's two different versions. Let's start... I want both. I want both versions of you.
Sure. Well, I think that the Western world is in serious decline, and that literally in real time you can see it falling apart. So you have to find somewhere else to live, and the world's not really that big. I think that the values which held the Western world together at some point have been proven to be false, and all of it is a lie. I feel like all of the metrics in which you can measure the success of a society, the Western world is failing in. So once you accept that, you say, okay, the West is failing. It's on its way down. I can't live in the West. And then you look at a map and you look at South America, which is very dangerous, and I'm not South American, and I don't speak Spanish. And then Eastern Europe, which is where we are now, preserves its culture via religion, and they have some other societal, what's the word I'm looking for? Traditions, which certainly preserve the culture better. It's a slower decline. So I felt like this might be a good place to live. Unfortunately, I think in the 7 years I've been here, Eastern Europe is catching up with the West, and I feel like it's going to go down the same hole. So I'm going to have to move again. But when I moved here 7 years ago, it just felt like a safer place, felt like a nicer place, and decided to leave. I don't see what America or England or the West has for people anymore.
Okay, question. Do you think that this generation is more evil than the past generations?
I don't think they're evil. I think they're lost, and I think they're misguided. And I think we're now living in a culture where I'm a full-grown man. I'm 36 years old. I catch myself, even at my ripe old age and high level of professionalism, sometimes for a few seconds, only a few seconds before I correct myself, scrolling on garbage. Imagine how these 14 and 15 year old children are even being raised, just scrolling through these social media algorithms, which are deliberately designed to poison their mind. And they're going to school, they're being fed absolute garbage, and they have no religious connotations, no God, and no family unit. They're just a mess. And then we look at, like I said, every metric in which you can measure the health of a society, the crime rate and the cost of living, basic things, traffic, anything you can measure, the West is falling off a cliff. So it's like, how do you fix all of that? So I decided to move to Eastern Europe, and I had a very good time here, and I was treated very well, and it's a very safe place, and it's a beautiful country. I've been through some recently things changed a bit.
I think you can get out of your house.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Well, I'm allowed out of my house. Yeah, that's nice.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, what's the first thing you did when you got out of your house?
My first day off of house arrest, I stayed in the house.
That's fucking weird, man.
I know, but it was a sign of resistance.
Oh, you wanted to prove that you could keep going.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel like you're flexing all the time. Like, if I was on house arrest, who the fuck are you flexing for? Just leave. And anything, you could have lied and be like, no, I stayed for an extra 3 days. But like, you stayed.
I stayed.
Just to prove a point.
Yeah.
No, I was just joking about the lie. Yeah. Actually, I have it in my notes because I know that you don't like lying. And I have a story about lying. I was, I'm not going to mention his name out of respect for him, but he took me on his jet. We were having a great time. We were about to do business together. Yep. We were courtside. And he made a comment about one of the basketball players. He's like, well, he's a little bitch because he told his teammate was cheating and got him in a scandal. Yep. And I said, well, the other man was cheating. He was lying. Yep. And he goes, he turns to me and he goes, if you have a problem doing business with people that cheat, you'll never work. And I, one, stopped immediately wanting to work with this guy. Two, my provider is God, nobody else. Yep. So it comes with morals. Yep. If you're going to cheat on a woman that you're building a life with and being fruitful with, what the fuck are you going to do to me?
Well, that's very true. And that's very valid. And but I'll play devil's advocate here. What the other guy said about if you have problems doing business with someone who cheats, you're never going to do any business. Unfortunately, he's also pretty right. Because it's rife.
Not with partners, though. I don't feel like you want to get in business with a partner. I mean, think about this. He shares a family bloodline with the person that he's robbing.
Yeah.
I'm nothing to him.
That's true. And that is infallible logic.
So how can I even... For me, my girl, right? She's my partner.
Yeah.
I couldn't focus if I had to come do this interview with you and I know she's out somewhere. Now I have to think about what she's doing. It's taking away from me.
Yeah.
So if I'm breaking bread with a man and I'm doing business with him, I can't sit around wasting my time thinking about what he's doing.
And you're completely right. And I totally understand that. But as a honest individual, I have to sit here and be honest and analyze myself and analyze my own romantic relationships. Am I completely faithful in the traditional sense? No. Why is that? That's a good question. I can't say exactly why that is, but I think that probably the biggest decline in the Western world, I have to accept, even though I partake in it and even though I am guilty of it, I think the biggest failing of the Western world is that men and women do not stick together anymore. I think it would fix a lot of problems.
I find that very fascinating that you know that's the problem. You teach men to be better men and to fix their problems. Don't run away from it. But you know that monogamy is a challenge for you. But you don't want
to... It's not a challenge. Monogamy is not a challenge for me. Monogamy is a decision that every man must make. But for you to make that decision, you have to sit down and decide that, you know, this woman is worth me being monogamous to, which is fine. Mm. I think the biggest struggle that men have in the Western world today is finding a woman who they believe is worth being monogamous to. I don't think men have a problem with monogamy as much as men have a problem finding a woman who they truly believe they should be monogamous to. Also, there's something that's interesting about monogamy, because we can talk about this and it can be a very interesting conversation. In days of old, high-value men, important men, kings, warriors, whatever, had multiple wives. And they had to look after the multiple wives, or they had mistresses, and they had children with them all, and they had to look after them all. Mm-hmm. In certain cultures today, that is still the case. In certain religions today, that is still the case. In the Christian world, in the Western world, we have said, that's unacceptable, we should be monogamous.
Yeah.
But then you have the majority of men who are monogamous are cheating. The ones who are not cheating are using prostitutes sometimes, or going to strip clubs sometimes, or consuming pornography. So they're not truly actually loyal. So you've moved the idea of a man having three or four women he loves and taking care of to a man having one woman he's supposed to love and doing a whole bunch of things in secret. You've just subsidized monogamy and you've removed it all towards pornography and degeneracy. Mm. So then you have to sit and argue, well, why does so much degeneracy happen in the West? Is it because we are not allowing men to be more true to their instincts? This is all brand new thoughts for me, and I'm just speaking as I think. But let's look at another example, right?
Well, before, can I tap in with that? So what's your example, right? So I have an example, Christ. Mm-hmm. He gives me his way, and I kind of follow it.
Yep.
If I had to follow men and their needs, I'd be burned up tomorrow.
And I don't think it's needs. I don't think men cheat because of needs.
Women cheat because of like feelings. They get an emotional attachment to them. Men cheat because of more lustful body type thing. I've never heard of a man being like, man, I can't wait to talk to Becky.
Of course, but I think a lot of it's also ego.
Exactly. So, but ego, what comes before ego? Or it comes after ego?
Yeah, a fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, my thing is, yes, when I met here's my theory.
Yeah.
When I was out about and I was having fun, as a Christian man, I was waiting for the right woman.
Yeah.
And I came to this guy and he goes, I don't understand. I thought you were Christian. And I go, listen, bro, I'll be a good Christian man to a good Christian woman. When I find somebody who has good morals and I know that she'll have my back and she'll do good. Yeah. And when God presents me that girl, I will be a good man to her.
Yeah.
And he asked me something that changed my life forever. He goes, well, if you're the son of God and you're asking for his daughter, why would that father ever give you a daughter when you treat everybody else like garbage? And so I had to think. I think when it comes to blessings, I believe that it's given from God.
Yep.
And to move on to new blessings, you have to handle what you've been given.
Agreed.
So if I've been given the fame and the money and the access to women, God's monitoring me. Okay, are you going to go fool around, act like trash?
Can you be trusted?
Could you be trusted with this daughter that I have over here?
Yes.
Kind of like that picture that where Jesus is holding a beautiful bear behind him.
Yep.
And then you're holding on to this lifestyle that you still want, but you're like, this is great. And God's like, no, give it to me. Show me you're ready for it, and then I'll present it like any good father would be.
Yes, absolutely.
And I did. I cleaned up my act. I was celibate.
Yeah.
And I was showing him, I'm trying now to be ready.
Yep.
And then I found a beautiful girl, and then I became monogamous. Yep. And then I have a good partnership. And here's the thing. I could lead that relationship anywhere I want. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to be opened, it could be there. Yep. Not saying that she's comfortable with it, but when it first started, I could plant the seeds into taking it in any direction that I want.
Correct.
It takes somebody with integrity to lead a woman in the right direction.
Absolutely.
I tell people all the time, I'm in charge of the relationship. God is in charge of everything.
Yeah.
So when my girl looks at me to lead the house, I gotta lead the house, but it's not from my needs.
Yeah.
Because if it was my needs, bro, she's out shit cold. That, like, she's not gonna get the best out of it.
Of course.
But now I have a God looking at me and monitoring it. You gotta love her like you love my church.
No, absolutely. Everything you're saying is completely true, and I agree with you. There's two ways we can answer the question. We can talk about it from a religious perspective and what you just described, and you're right, being a God-fearing man is gonna lead a woman in the correct direction because a woman is a reflection of her man. And that's why you see if a woman gets with a bad guy who does drugs, she ends up doing drugs and doing bad things, and a man can lead her in the wrong direction.
She comes from our ribs, metaphorically and physically and mentally, right? Yeah. So if I'm going to be, like you're saying, doing drugs, she's going to follow my lead.
Absolutely. But I'm just talking about it from a societal perspective. I'm making an overall societal observation, the fact that now we have monogamous societies, but because they're not truly monogamous, all of the desire is being outsourced towards degeneracy, as opposed to having a society where a man is allowed more than one wife, for example, and then the degeneracy isn't needed. You don't need pornography and you don't need prostitution if you're allowed to have 2, 3, 4 wives if you're successful. And the point I was going to make earlier is that in certain countries, this is still the case. And I'm just speaking here in generalities. I don't have proof for any of this, but if you look at Russia, right? Mm. Russia is a Christian nation. There's a lot of Muslims as well, but it's traditionally a Christian nation. But if you're a very rich, powerful Russian man, and I've been to Moscow, I can assure you, you have maybe 4 or 5 wives. Well, not wives, 4 or 5 girls.
Yeah.
And your wife understands about who the other girls are, and she doesn't really care. Don't look, don't care, don't ask. I have a Bentley, I have a big house, I have the children. He plays around with these other girls sometimes. I don't care, I'm his wife, and that's just how things are set up. That particular man who's very, very rich, he's not interested in pornography, he's not interested in prostitutes, he's satisfied, he has enough for whatever his ego desires or his heart desires. Then you look at the West, and you look at the most degenerate things which can possibly happen, which are actually levels above prostitution and pornography. If you look at Epstein's Island, for example, when you have very rich, powerful men, and they're told by the public sphere, you're not allowed to have more than one woman, but they don't have God to control them. They're godless. Mm. Then they say, okay, well, how can I satisfy myself if God's not restricting me? The society's saying I can only have one woman. I'm not allowed to have 4 or 5, which would satisfy me in some regard for my ego or unhealthy reason or whatever my reason is. So I'm going to end up doing things in private. I'm going to end up doing things in secret. Mm. And then you have Epstein's Island appear. So it's kind of interesting. God is important, and God is extremely required to restrict people. But if you take the God out of the element and you only use society to try and restrict the sexual desires of people and tell them they have to be monogamous, you're going to end up with more degeneracy than if men were allowed to be polyamorous and have more than one wife. Does that make sense?
100%. And the reason why I asked you, is this generation more evil than the last? And I wanted to circle back how you said the West is falling apart.
Yeah.
I believe that it's kind of, and I always go back to biblical references, not because I'm an annoying Christian, but I just like truth. And I notice that truth comes out of these testimonies that I see.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I've realized with humanity, God or no God, it's your access.
Yeah.
And I think that's why God reflects the heart. He doesn't reflect your actions. He reflects your heart. Because
yeah.
Let me give an example, pornography. I don't watch porn.
Me neither.
The reason why I don't watch porn is, one, it's unhealthy.
Before you carry on, I don't watch porn because it's genuinely uninteresting.
Like, it's gotten weird.
You can put porn on and I'd be like, yeah. I just don't get it. That's the thing.
And also, for example, I like to practice the monogamous relationship. So when I get married one day, I know my girlfriend's not going to be at the prime model look when she's 50 or whatever she is. Yeah. So I got to practice that this is the only woman that I have. It's
Correct. Diligence. Correct.
Okay. So opening up the access. Look at a man who's watching pornography. I fall off the wagon every once in a while. I'm not sitting here saying that I'm perfect. About a year, maybe 2 years ago, I was watching porn, and there was, back in the day when I was growing up, was like your stepmom.
Yeah.
And to me, that was always weird because I'm like, dude, that's your, like, still, it's your mom.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's your mom. And then when I, like, last year when I tried, I did a KSI and Sideman thing where it was Impulsive and Sideman. We did this collab, and there was a girl who does porn there, and I made a joke, and I go, look, I'm stuck. And it went viral, and I realized, I'm like, everybody laughed at this joke because they know what I'm saying. And it's this porn style thing where if women are stuck, then men would come and have sex with them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
of course it is. Yeah.
That's
yep.
And these men are enjoying this.
Yep.
So what is this teaching them? That you could take what doesn't belong to you. And I think a lot of the things that they're programming these kids to do actually comes first through pornography, because you watch it in secret and you're not really dabbling with your men what you're watching. It's kind of like a mustard seed that grows.
Yep. But then the question is, are they doing it on purpose? This is where you go deeper down the rabbit hole.
This video is sponsored by a freaking beast of a product that I absolutely love. Electric e-bike. Now, you guys always hear me talking about me riding my electric bikes, but there's a bike out there right now that is the perfect bike for the holidays. Perfect for your wallet, perfect for your entertainment, perfect for literally everything. I'm talking about for traveling, right? You don't want to put it on the hitch. You want something that could fold and you could put in your trunk, take it to the beach, take it to your mother's house, take it to somebody who likes bikes, but you're like, hey, let me unfold mine real quick. And then we could just ride together. You want one zippy, fast. You want one that has good durability, that's safe when you're riding. You want one that you could take everywhere, anywhere, at all times. Well, that's electricebike.com. Get hundreds of dollars in free accessories with your electric e-bike purchase this holiday, including America's best-selling e-bike, the XP 3.0. Visit electricebikes.com. That is L-E-C-T-R-I-C-E bikes.com. If you're dyslexic like me, I'll write it right here for you. Please visit the website. Doing it on purpose?
Well, there you go. Then you go deeper down the rabbit hole.
Okay, let's go deep.
Let's accept pornography is bad for a society. Mm-hmm. Let's accept that to be a fact.
It is true.
Okay, yeah. So pornography is bad for a society. Okay, why are they trying to destroy the society? Who are these people? What is their end goal? Is their end goal the sexualization of children? Is their end goal 12-year-olds to sit there and watch pornography and want to have sex? Is their end goal to confuse 12-year-olds to want them to try and change genders? Is that their end goal? I don't know. Is that why they take down the country's flag and put up another flag? This is another thing you have to understand. We talk about the Western world being fallen.
Do you mind moving that mic towards your mouth?
We talk about the Western world being fallen. What even is the culture of the Western world anymore? We have gang signs, and we have frozen food, and we have the pride flag. What else? Like, what even is there anymore that unifies us in any regard? I mean, I think I'm pretty sure, and I've never tested this, I don't want to find out, I'm under enough Matrix attacks, but if you were to burn an American flag and burn a pride flag, you'd do more time for burning the pride flag. It's a hate crime. So you have to actually then understand is, okay, if this is destroying society, is it being done on purpose? And what is the end goal of it? And who's doing it in the first place? And then it gets really scary. I agree with everything you're saying about pornography, and I agree with everything you're saying about monogamy. I'm just trying to analyze the world and how it actually functions, and how do you fix these things? And
setting examples, leading by example. My question to you is this. Let's label this group of people that you're let's just, I want to label so we can always circle back to it. What would you like to call them? The Matrix?
The Matrix.
The Matrix. So the Matrix is there. Do you feel like the Matrix is hyped up using media? Because think about it. When I walk around and I have discussions with people, not a lot of people have the same agenda that the media is having. And I think people are keeping up with it. So do you think they're flexing their power? Let me give you an example. Yep. God is all powerful, all strong.
Yep.
The devil isn't. But yep. What his power is lies. Yep. So he confuses you. God uses faith. The devil uses fear.
Yep.
Do you think the Matrix is just full of shit and they're just fear-based?
Oh, they're absolutely fear-based.
So what is your goal? If you had to fight, like you are fighting, and you're banned from, what are you banned from? Like,
everything.
But you're on Twitter.
Elon bought Twitter and restored me. Before this, I was banned on Twitter also. I'm banned on...
Why did you get banned?
I got banned because you get three lives. And the three lives are, first, you get canceled and banned absolutely everywhere. And the second life is they try and put you in jail for something you didn't do. And then the third life is they assassinate you. And I'm now on my second life, as most people have experienced in real time. I got banned because I became monumentally popular. I became hugely successful. I became the most Googled person on the planet. And then they make up a reason to get rid of you. And I'm banned on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Spotify, SoundCloud, Uber, Airbnb, Gmail, WhatsApp.
You can't get an Uber?
I can't get an Uber, no. Gmail, WhatsApp, you name an application.
All for standing up for what you believe in.
Well, yeah. I mean, I made some satirical jokes, of course.
Could you give me an example of something that you've said that you may have crossed the line?
I don't think I ever said anything that truly crossed the line. I'm going to stand by this because I don't believe in regrets, and I don't believe in sitting here and saying sorry for anything because I'm not a coward. If I made a video 10 years ago that got 84 YouTube views, and me and my brother were joking about how women can't park and women shouldn't drive.
Yeah.
And then I became the most Googled man on the planet. And then that is found. And then a bunch of feminists get upset by it. Yeah. I'm not going to sit here and beat myself up over that. That's life. Yeah. Oh, well. shit happens.
But also, like, stand-up comedians make the craziest jokes. Like, I was in a comedy club, and they're already making jokes about Palestine.
Of course. I mean, comedians make jokes, and rappers sing about murdering people. So it's completely a double standard to come along and say that whatever I said was enough reason for me to be canceled.
Well, that scares me, because censorship is the scariest thing to me in the world. At what point can we not worship our God?
My phone. The day the cancellation started, I opened my phone, and app by app, one by one, logged out, logged out, logged out. Logged out, logged out. And in sync, I was sitting there for 2 hours, and every 20 minutes, a new one would just log out.
Were you scared?
I knew the Matrix was real. I knew how the Matrix operated. I knew that there's a centralized power. I was scared because I knew I'd used up my first life. And then I started saying on all my podcasts, they're going to put me in jail for something I did not do. When that happens, you have to know it's a lie. And I said it about 15 times. And then 7 months later, I ended up in a cell. So I understand exactly how the world works. So yeah, I was scared. But I also believe, and I draw a lot of strength from my religion. We talk about God. I think God gives you strength. And I also believe one of the primary objectives of a religion, which ties back into what we were saying earlier about how the world could be fixed if men and women stay together and monogamy. I think the primary objective of a religion is to preserve a culture. If a religion doesn't preserve the culture, then it's failing in some regard. You should look at a religion and look at the culture underneath that religion and say, okay, it's a successful religion because the culture is adhering to its creeds. So I understand that it is my battle, if I believe in God, to try my best to preserve the culture. And then you're asking, how do I fight the Matrix? I think you fight that via masculine empowerment, and I'll tell you why. Because we were just sitting here talking about how the devil uses fear, and you're completely correct. And I think that women are easier to scare than men. And I think that now we live in a society, especially in the West, where women have been empowered to the point, well, I'm not against female empowerment, I'm not a misogynist, but they've been empowered to the point where they're more powerful than men in most scenarios. They're more powerful than men in the divorce court, most powerful than men in the custody court, more powerful than men in terms of the education system, more powerful than men in terms of their testimony, more powerful than men. I'll give you endless examples. If 10 men get murdered, nobody cares. If 10 women get murdered, it's going to be a national news story for weeks. Their life is more valuable. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be. It always has been because they can create life. My point is we now live in a society which I believe is a matriarchy. It's feminized. And men are feminized by extension. And men being feminized means that women are in charge and women are fearful. So let me give you a very simple example of why I believe masculine empowerment is how we actually get closer to God and how we fix the fight we're in against the Matrix. COVID. COVID was emotional arguments. They came along and said, your grandma's going to die. The old people, your grandma, they used emotional arguments. Emotional arguments to create fear. That works on a woman. A woman sits there, I love my grandma. Most men would sit there and go, wait.
Let's just chill.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Grandma's already 94. Grandmas die. So I don't think we should be taking our kids out of school. Let's just calm down. Men are more stoic and more patient. If you had a household where the man's been feminized and the woman's in charge, it's over for that house. They're full COVID cucks head to toe. 10 vaccines. If you had my household, where my girlfriend ran in, did you see the news? Shut up. This is stupid.
Okay,
and then it's fixed.
But this is
the point. Fear. You're talking about fear, the devil using fear. Absolutely correct. How does he scare people? He scares cowards. He scares people who can't fight. He scares women. He scares people who are not prepared to stand up and resist. So masculine empowerment is absolutely and utterly how you battle the devil. You need men to be as strong and capable as possible.
Okay. This is a great, great pivot that I want to say. Everything you just said, I agreed with. Everything you just said, I agreed with. The only problem that I see is when you were like, shut up. Let me give you an example. Here's the reason why. Everything you just said was absolutely correct. And as a man, I could look at you, and if I had children, I'd be like, yo, listen to this man. He's being very, very correct. Now, my girl's going to be like, well, why did he just tell his girl to shut the fuck up? Like,
I said shush.
Yes. Okay, let me give an example.
I was dismissive with my hand.
No, I know, but you know what this means?
Flicking the diamonds.
Get the fuck out of my face.
Shh.
This is what every girl here, shut up and go make me a sandwich. This is what comes off. So you're fighting getting men to be like, yes, but then you turn off the women. Here's the problem. You're trying to make men more men. But men, before they listen to you, are listening to the girls because they just got a girl. They don't want to lose them. They did everything that they could to get this girl.
Correct.
So here's the thing. When you see a fireman bust into a building that's on fire, he's not going to look at the person and be like, what the fuck? Why did you do this? He's going to be like, hey, it's okay. Look at me. Grab my hand. Come out.
Yep.
Why can't you take that approach?
I think I am. And it's actually funny when you say I lose to women, because I'll tell you something that most people probably do not know. I don't know if I've said it before. I have never had a negative interaction with a female ever since I blew up on the internet. I've not had a single woman complain at me.
I'm sorry. Could you just use your mic?
Sure. I've never had a single woman come up to me and say anything bad. When I was in jail, I had thousands of love letters from women. I've never had a single woman complain about anything I say. Now, I agree. This dismissive, the diamonds, you know, in the light. I get it.
Yeah.
Is it purposeful? I don't want to say it's purposeful. Do I find myself amusing? Certainly.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
It's funny.
But here's the thing. We could take a joke and we could filter the bullshit.
Yeah.
But females, like you said, they're based off of emotions.
Correct.
They're going to feel their emotions first and then react. Men are like, oh, that's fucking hilarious. Obviously, he's not going to tell his girl to do that.
Yeah.
Most likely, the real scenario is like, sweetheart, come sit down. Everything's fine. Listen to me. I'm going to protect you.
Absolutely.
So I'm just curious to know, why don't you just take that approach? Because I know what you're doing. You're a chess master. Every move you make, you're making it for a reason. Are you doing it to be polarizing?
There's no light without dark.
Mm.
And I think that it's actually kind of interesting. I don't have many haters anymore. For a while I did. About a year ago, there was a big group of the internet that disliked me. Now I actually would argue I'm one of the most liked people on the internet.
I think people are waking up.
People, bro, every single, if you read thousands of comments, they're all positive. I'm one of the most liked people on the internet. And I can give you reasons for why I believe that is. But the very few people left who try and dislike me, they fuel conversation, and it's interesting for them to, it's interesting for me to hear. It's interesting for there to be debates regarding things I say. But I think I don't think I try and be polarizing. I tried to be abrasive because I grew up in a world where I was hit very hard by life. And I think life is abrasive. And I think you learn lessons with a degree of abrasiveness. I think if things are too soft and too well explained, you don't learn them. Yeah. And you can apply that to nearly anything, right? You can go driving your car and drive fast and you can nearly lose the tires 10 times, but you're not going to stop driving like an idiot until you hit a tree.
Mm.
And then you're going to be like, okay, I've learned my lesson.
Yeah.
So perhaps when I display a point, if I have to self-analyze and answer your question as a professional, when I try and get a point across, if I can do something or say something which is a bit abrasive, I feel like it teaches better. I'll give an example. If I say women aren't very good at parking, as opposed to females have no spatial awareness. So it's the same thing, but one of them enrages the world. In fact, both of them make them mad, but the second one really makes them mad. Okay. Don't call women females. They hate that.
I don't.
Yeah, but I'm just warning you. But then
they actually get upset if you call them a female.
Absolutely, I sit on these panel shows with a bunch of women, and I'll say
what
something.
What do you?
Positive.
What do you? What do you respectfully call them?
Females. I just call them female.
No, I know, but if they get offended by that, then what do you call them?
Well, exactly. But this is my point. So I can decide how abrasive I want to be. You can say the same thing in different ways, and then you're asking me why am I abrasive to be deliberately polarizing? Because I feel like it gets my message across better. And even now, the thing I just said, which brought this whole point up, me saying shh and being dismissive was a small way of showing a larger meta point. And the meta point was, I'm uninterested in what you're about to say and your fear.
I'm uninterested in your fear. I get this. And usually somebody with a logic understands this.
Yep.
Somebody who's probably grew up with humor understands this. Somebody who grew up with a good father understands this. So this is my thing. God made you a leader. 100%.
I'll take it.
Okay. And now you're leading men.
Yep.
But there's a huge crowd of people that you will never understand or touch because I feel pridefully, you don't give a fuck. You're like, if you can't come on with me on this journey, then get the fuck bent. Literally, metaphorically, and physically.
Well, not all minds are ready to be freed. They say it inside of the movie.
But which one is valuable enough to be free? Christ saved everybody. He didn't just come and pick a couple people.
Absolutely. But you can lead a horse to water, or you cannot force it to drink. And I feel like the reason why I'm now one of the most liked people on the internet, and the reason my comments are so positive, I have to answer that question, is because I feel like I'm heavily leveraged against chaos. The thing is with my brand, I don't entertain. I do entertain, but that's not my purpose. I'm trying to teach people things. I'm trying to give them things. Even the things I sell are beneficial. I have a school that teaches people how to make money online. It's beneficial. If you follow me, you can make money online. You'll start to train and go to the gym. You'll listen to some positive motivational things. You'll feel more motivated. I'll try and guide you towards God. Either one. I'm not even strictly Islam. I believe that if you are a religious person, you're a better person regardless of the religion you choose.
Because you have to follow your morals and have boundaries.
Absolutely. So all of my messaging is positive. So as the world gets more messed up, I'm leveraged against chaos. As the world becomes a bigger mess, as people struggle to survive to pay their bills, as people become more and more unhappy, as the wars start, all this craziness, people sit there and go, do I want to be entertained by clowns? Do I want to watch these streamers who are clowns? Do I want to be entertained? Or do I want a solution? Do I want some form of stability? Who is saying things which can actually help me, which actually will directly impact my life in real time and make me feel better? And that's me. So I'm not an entertainer in that way, which is why I believe my brand has become so strong and why most people like me. And it's also why a lot of people will forgive me for being semi-abrasive, because I feel like as the world gets more messed up, which it is, people are going to learn some very abrasive, harsh lessons. And sometimes when you've gone through a very harsh lesson, to be given a solution which isn't harsh, you're not going to believe it. To be given a harsh solution makes you feel like, okay, this guy knows exactly what he's talking about. I was on a podcast very recently. I don't think it's even come out yet. And I was explaining to somebody, we were talking about depression, which everyone asked me about.
I'm going to circle back to that. I have something in my notes for that.
Yeah. And I was saying that as a man, your life is supposed to be shit. My argument to this is people go, oh, I don't feel good. I say, good. Your life as a man is going to be terrible the entire time. Who told you at any point? I don't know what the Bible says. I haven't read it cover to cover like I've read the Quran. But I don't think the Bible says you're supposed to be happy all of the time. The Quran certainly doesn't.
Well, Matthew, it says you're supposed to cast your anxiety and depression on him. So life isn't going to be easier, but you could go. Let me give you an example.
Sure.
When Jesus was walking on the water, this is the example I say. When a storm hits, the storm is still hitting.
Yep.
But there's a difference from you drowning in the storm or standing above the storm.
Absolutely.
And I think that you're always going to have challenges and obstacles.
Storms are going to come.
But I guarantee you, there's obstacles that you could walk through with a smile on your face that another man could fall apart.
Absolutely. I've just been through some. And I'm sure I'll have more.
What was it?
Well, it says in the Quran, just because you believe, you think Allah will not test you. Just because you believe in me, you think you're not going to be tested.
I think being tested is a great thing for you.
That's how God shows love.
Yeah.
Because God. Yeah, because God's love is a disciplinarian love. It's a masculine love. It's like a father. A father shows love through putting you on the bike, letting you fall over, letting you hurt your knee, picking you back up, putting you back on the bike. That's how a father shows love, and God is the same.
Your father used to push you down when you used to be a kid.
Yeah, that's right.
Your mom used to be upset about this.
Yeah.
Let's time travel back to you as a child.
Sure.
Because I feel like what made you who you are now is based mostly off of how you were raised.
Absolutely.
Take me back.
Yeah, I think I had the best possible upbringing a person can have, which is good parents and no money. I didn't get famous or rich young, which I also thank the Lord for. I think a lot of these people who get famous online quite early, I think they miss out a lot of life.
It's not real life. It's not real life.
No, I had real jobs and I did real things and I was really broke and I was really on the bus and really trying to pay rent and doing real stuff for a long time.
I wrote a line in here and I think you could relate to it. A poor man is broke. A rich man is broken. So if you're broke, you could figure out a way to be rich. But if you were given everything and you don't know how to manage this life, you're broken and you don't feel like you've earned anything. I've met more depressed rich men than I've met depressed broke men.
It's amazing you say that, because there's two answers to that. My first one is, I love that you say that, because I always say I'm not rich. I'm a poor man with a lot of money. I always used to say that. And I don't want to brag or anything, but just because I get asked this question a lot. I've been extremely successful. I have hundreds of millions of dollars. In fact, I think our last valuation across everything we own was, we're almost at B now. So we're doing very, very, I'm a billionaire. Top G's a billionaire. So we're doing extremely well. That's the first thing. The second thing, it's great that you say that, because I completely agree. Because if you're born with everything, if you're born with all this money, that you have no aspiration, nothing to actually grasp onto and trying to achieve, then money doesn't make you happy. But then you can analyze this from another angle, right? We were just talking earlier, we can always pivot back to who the Matrix are, who's in charge. So let me ask you.
Do you have somebody?
Let me ask you a question.
Okay, go ahead.
If you're born into a dynasty, let's say a banking dynasty, and you're born a billionaire, and you have everything you've ever wanted ever, and money has absolutely no value at all, and a brand new Ferrari doesn't mean a thing. You could buy one every 10 minutes for the rest of your life. And money doesn't make you happy. What's the one thing that's going to make you happy?
Controlling others.
Power.
Yeah.
Ego. So then you sit there and start looking at things.
Because
going,
games become real.
Absolutely. Yeah. So now you're like, okay, well, money doesn't satisfy me. What makes me feel important? Especially if you're going to add in another angle to it. Let's imagine you falsely believe, because it is falsely, that you're somehow genetically better than others. You're from this lineage. You're better than the other people. And the other people, the serfs and peasants, are struggling for money, and you have unlimited money because you're so smart and your family's always been so smart.
You'll have haughty eyes.
Yeah. So then you're going to sit there and go, Well, why did they make people put on a mask when they walked in the restaurant and take the mask off to eat and then put it on to go to the toilet and then take it off to eat and then put it back on?
Because I have a
I'll tell you why. Because it's funny.
You think it's just
people.
Because it's funny? Because
it's an ego. Because it's ego.
I thought
it
was a test to see how far they could push something.
Compliance tests.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing. So when you really understand that people who are in charge of the world are completely, like you said, broken. There are broken people. Money can't satisfy them. People said, I keep referencing COVID, and I do that because it was something tangible that everybody lived through. That's a very easy one to reference.
It's a bad thing that could work in your favor because now they could relate to you.
Yeah.
Did you guys know we do live shows? Well, technically, we've only had one real live show, and it went amazing.
Thank you.
And next year, we're going to be doing so many more. If you want me to come to your city, text me here, this number, so I can know where to go. I'll see. I'll be like, oh, look, Chicago, or oh, New York, or oh, Minneapolis. Okay. Enjoy the show. They went through that.
Yeah.
So it's hard to explain to a broke kid what a rich kid goes through,
yeah.
Or what a broke person goes through. Yeah. So this is actually a huge blessing. Do you think that COVID and people's frustration and what happened to them link them to understand your theories more?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of what I was saying during COVID about the Matrix, everyone called me crazy. And by the end of COVID, a lot of people were like, Andrew, you nailed it day one. Because I don't think many people understand, because I wasn't nearly as famous then, but the videos exist on the internet. Me and my brother were the kings of COVID. Everyone else now understands it was garbage. Everyone else talks tough. Everyone else has their story about how they went out during COVID.
Now.
But you're tough now. On day one of COVID, day one, when they still had the people falling over in the street in China.
Yeah, and what was that? Bro, that video?
Yeah.
They're just running in the street and dropping dead?
Yep. When the Italian hospital was overrun. Day one, my brother and I sat down and had a conversation in our war room, our cigar lounge, which looks very similar to this. And we sit down and said, if this disease will kill people like you and I, military-aged males, then the world is over. It's zombie apocalypse. So what are we going to do? And we sat there and decided whether we should hide as long as possible or we should just go out all guns blazing. So we decided to go out all guns blazing like heroes. This is all documented. It's on video. And day one of COVID, when everyone else was afraid, we flew to Sweden because it was the only open country. And we spent the next 4 months.
Ironic.
Yeah.
Because who lives in Sweden?
Very strange. We spent the next 4 months in Stockholm in 6 nights a week in nightclubs with Swedish chicks partying while the rest of the world was locked in their house. Nobody talks about this. Nobody talks about the fact that Sweden was open, no restrictions, you could do whatever you wanted, nightclubs were open, everyone was partying, everyone else was locked up, not allowed to go to funerals. We were literally in parties all day, every day. I didn't even get sick, didn't even get a cold, and it was cold outside, didn't even get the sniffles. So we beat COVID, we won COVID early. So even after this experience, for the next 2 years of COVID, I'm trying to scream at people, listen, wake up. And like, oh, yeah, they wouldn't just put it on the news. They wouldn't just lie to us and try and scare us all for no reason until you understand the good and evil in the world and you understand that's how the devil actually operates. But the point I was going to make earlier about talking about how these people are broken and money doesn't satisfy them, people often say, COVID was just for money. And I say, that's actually a very optimistic view of the world. It wasn't just for money. It was for something far worse.
They have money.
They print money.
Yeah.
They make money. They are the money.
When I found out about I just learned about how they print money, I literally could not believe it.
Oh, yeah, money's not real.
For 3 days, I'm sitting around, so I'm like, what the fuck is this? So they can just print this shit?
Money is not real. It's not real. They just print it. It's not real.
Fair. Please continue.
Yeah, so money's not real. And I say that to people. And they go,
so it's not about money.
No, it's not about money. So what's it about? It's about power and control.
Yep.
Because when you get to a certain level of wealth, and I'll talk from my own personal experience, I want people to understand I come from the lowest possible socioeconomic background. I come from a single mother household. My father and mother broke up when I was 9. I lived in Luton, England, which is the worst town in England. I grew up and went to a school with a 3% pass rate. Everyone around me was stabbing each other and selling drugs.
I thought you said your father was one of the best fathers you've ever had.
He was. But my mother and father broke up and he stayed in America and I moved to England. And he wasn't financially successful, but he taught me other lessons.
Gotcha.
And I'm glad he didn't give me money because I think that a harsh upbringing and a harsh life makes a man a man. I don't think you learn a lesson any other way. Mm. But I come from the absolute bottom and now I'm up at a position where we have a very large empire. A lot of it is shadow. Most people don't know what it is, but even our overt things, even our university and things that are online are turning over $15, $20 million a week. So we're doing crazy sums of money. So I've been from the absolute bottom to the absolute top. I've seen it all. And once you get past a certain level of wealth, once you get past a certain level of money, yeah, but then you understand what money is, right? So we say about money not being real. Money is not real from a governmental perspective because they just print it. It's nothing. But money is truthfully the stored time and energy of other people. If you have money, you have stored time and energy of other humans.
Because people are hourly rates.
That's right. Because I can take that money and make someone else use their time and energy for X thing.
Got it. So once, it's a different version of slavery.
Absolutely. Because if I'm going to come along and say, you're no longer my slave. As my slave, you had to work for a house and a car. You're no longer my slave. In slavery, let's actually look at slavery.
Slavery began that way.
Yeah, and slavery said, you work on my plantation, I give you somewhere to eat.
Or I'll give you my daughter.
Yeah.
This is how people would work. And that's why they were like, oh, your Bible believes in slavery. I'm like, slavery was different. It wasn't like, there was bondages. Yeah. And there was slavery. That's why the Egyptians, that's a whole different type of slave. Yep. But the origination of slave was like a debt. I'm paying you a debt.
Yep. Yep. Completely. So let's look at even American slavery, the slavery that most Americans understand. You're going to work for me. I'm going to give you a house and I'm going to give you food and you're going to stay here and you're going to work. Slavery is abolished. So now what do? You're going to work for me. I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you some money. And that money is enough to only buy you a house and some food. We've just put money in the middle. Now, if I can make you do whatever I want for money and I can print as much money as I want, you're my slave because I can print it from the sky and you need it to live. So you are my slave. Money's not real. So I have all of this money. I have to store time and energy of other humans. And once you get past a certain level of wealth, you understand, which ties back to COVID, that you're not interested in money. What you're interested in is people. It's always been about having good people around you. You want a beautiful, doting, loving woman who's obsessed with you. You want good brothers who will stand by you and make you motivated. You want bodyguards who are going to protect you. You want people. And then you want to look at it further down the rabbit hole. You want to get more sinister. If you've been born into a lineage or a dynasty or the people who control the world, you want people, you want robot people. You don't want to be spoken to disrespectfully. In your empire, in your podcast empire, right? You now have a podcast. Would you allow a member of staff to come along and say, this is bullshit. I don't like how you do this. This is shit. You're shit. Or no. Would you fire him?
I don't know if I would fire them. I would first try to teach them how to behave.
And if they didn't listen?
They're out.
Absolutely. So let's imagine you ran a country.
Okay.
All right. Let's imagine you ran the world. And then let's imagine there's this guy called Top G who sits down there and becomes the most Googled man in the world for telling the world that COVID's a lie. And you're making everybody run around and do everything you say. You're going to allow that person to get away with it? And now you start to understand, that's how the Matrix operates. So the people who are broken, raised on money, are so obsessed with power and control, which explains a lot of the society we're in. Because they don't look up to God. These people think they are God.
So that's the biggest fall.
And they're trying to make robots of us all. They're trying to enslave us.
I you know what bothers me more than anything is when I walk into an establishment and the person who's working is like, go to there, and they point at a machine. What breaks my heart is that machine is going to replace you.
Yep.
And you have no idea.
Yep.
So you've gotten in a place where the person above you is encouraging you to be replaced. That's like, hey, see yourself out, legitimately.
Yep.
See yourself out.
But people don't think. They lack perspicacity. And then you go further down the rabbit hole because, like I said, there's layers to the rabbit hole. I don't know how Alex Jones you want me to go, but he's right about he's right about a lot of things.
So you're an Alex Jones fan.
I like a lot of the things he says. And I'm not saying I agree with everything he says, but a lot of the things he says have been proven to be absolutely true. You know, you say conspiracy theorist. Nowadays, that just means you're ahead of the curve, unfortunately. And Alex was talking about, and a lot of other people talking about, and there's a lot of text which talks about the fact that the people who are in charge of the world, they believe that as AI improves, a huge percentage of the planet are going to become useless ears. They don't need you anymore.
Actually scares me. The guy who created it is scared of it.
Well, that's the thing. So let's give a thought experiment. As it stands right now, most people are so uninteresting and so unremarkable that you could replace them online with a ChatGPT bot and you wouldn't really notice. Genuinely, that's how boring most humans are. If you're special and remarkable and unique and you're famous or you do whatever, that's different. But most people you could replace with ChatGPT by text, you wouldn't even notice. And that is a free application, which is brand new. Imagine we're going to be in 20 years from now. So we start talking about useless eaters. This has been discussed by very important, very powerful people at length. The same people who are trying to give you the vaccine are talking about the fact that the population of the earth needs to decline. They say it. Bill Gates says it. Why do we need to get rid of people? Well, machines will do it. So why do we need people sitting around who have hopes, dreams, aspirations? They want health care. They want safety, security, children, all of this garbage. We just need somebody to do X job, and a machine can do X job. So what do we need these people for? So then you start
I find it weird that Hollywood was the first one to strike about it, but it was about actors.
Well, yeah, because have you ever asked ChatGPT to write a movie?
Like that?
Bro, it's better than anything you've seen in Hollywood in a long time. There's no woke bullshit. There's no trans, lesbian, black, double-dicked fucking hero. So it's great.
You know what's so funny is that, like, this episode is definitely going to, like, fuck my account up, but I'm in for it. I'd rather be, like, real and... Like, if I God forbid, if I passed away, I just want to make sure that I was authentic.
Absolutely.
And so I'm really enjoying this conversation.
Absolutely.
So they're going to wipe people out with robots. How do you get in the way of that? So you want to be the Superman of this generation.
It's not about me trying to be the Superman, because I'm not that arrogant. It's just about me understanding what I know is going to happen and feeling like, if God has given me a platform which people listen to me, I should at least tell the truth of what's going to happen. Okay. When I'm sitting there and saying to men, look, life as a man is shit. It's always been shit. It's never been good. When men wake up and say, I'm depressed and life is hard and I'm sad and I'm struggling right now, I say, okay, throughout history, men have always struggled. Happiness is for children and women. Name a time in history it was better to be a man. Was it better to be a man in World War II? Was it better to be a man on the Titanic? Was it better to be a man in the Napoleonic Wars? Was it better to be a man when you were sitting in Vienna and the Mongol horde arrived, ready to decapitate any male and enslave all the females? When's it ever been good to be a man? Building the pyramids, was that fun? It's always sucked. The only time being a man ever is good is if you become an exceptional man, which is even something feminists admit. Because feminists sit and complain about men and say, well, men have this, men have that. But they're talking about 2% of men.
Fascinating.
They don't talk about all men. They say men have the best jobs. 2% of men have the best jobs. Most men carry trash. So you're talking crap. So everyone accepts that the best possible human experience that exists is the top 2% of men. Anything below that sucks as a man. You're better off being a chick. So what I say to men is, look, life's hard. It's always going to be hard. It's always going to suck. It always has. The only way to get out is to become excellent and perform at a level where your echelon is so high that you get to live this brand new experience. You need to become strong and smart and interesting and charismatic. You need to become rich, powerful, well-known, connected. You need to do it.
But could all men do that?
No.
So, okay.
But I have to tell them the truth. When people come along to me and say, my life's shit, and I look at them and go, yes.
Do you feel like you could change it? Shit. Do you think you could change all of that just from a perspective? I'll give you one. I am happy all the time now. I was in a bad place because I realized I was just focusing on bad things.
Yep.
And I was being a pussy and not fixing what I needed to fix. Once I fixed what I needed to fix, I started focusing on the good things in life.
Yep.
Like today, I'm sitting with Reed. We're having breakfast. And I looked down and we had a buffet and I had a crazy amount of plate, like just a crazy plate. I took a video of it.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I go, do you realize even the greatest men 1,000 years ago wouldn't be able to have all of this decorated on their plate. And we throw this out.
Yep.
So it's perspective.
Agreed.
So do you think that you need to make more rich men or more rich in the heart men?
That's a very good question. And when I say rich, I teach financials because I think financials are important.
It's a tool.
It's a tool, and you have a responsibility to take care of your family. So I think that as a man, your happiness comes from feeling respected over feeling loved. And the reason perhaps you're happy now is because you have more respect for yourself because of the decisions you're making.
Amen.
And you have self-respect.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of men, even if they have self-respect, if nobody else respects them, they're struggling. I think male depression can be fixed with respect.
I want to tap into depression. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that it's massively overdiagnosed. Mm-hmm. I say depression isn't real because I speak in absolutes. I think the idea of feeling depressed is real. I don't feel like it's a clinical disease that you catch from the sky and it can't be fixed. I feel like depression is feedback, pain is feedback, and your mind and body is telling you something must change. And if you make those changes, you will feel happier. I don't buy into the idea that it is a disease. I think it's situational, and you must change your situation and your actions and your decisions to feel better. And that's why I say it's not real. It's not a disease.
I have a point of view on it. I wanted to share mine and see if it kind of matches yours.
Sure.
And if you have a viewpoint on it.
Sure.
When I grew up, I like to describe myself. And then a lot of people get annoyed about that. And they're like, why do you talk about myself? Because who the fuck am I going to talk about? Do you know what I mean? Like, I hate that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to sit there and talk about Joe. I don't know who the fuck Joe is.
Yep.
I'm going to talk about George.
Yep.
George was raised, if I came home, I had a really tough childhood.
Yep.
And that's documented. Yep. I have a tough childhood when it came to making friends. I wasn't educated. They didn't know I was dyslexic. I had a lot of problems. When I came home, if I ever looked at my mom like, I'm depressed, she goes, no, you're not. And she nipped it right there.
Yeah.
Stop saying that. And then I grew up, and I'm reflecting. I'm going to bring it back to the Bible.
Yeah.
In the beginning was the what?
In the beginning was Light, wasn't it? In the beginning was the stars, and I should know this.
In the beginning was the Word.
The Word, you're right.
And he created everything with what? His mouth.
Yep.
And everything's vibration.
Yep.
People that don't even believe in God believe in energy.
Yes.
Okay. I think that we got to a place where if I looked at you every single day and I was somebody you cared about and was like, you're depressed, bro. You have anxiety. I have anxiety. So if I'm telling myself this every single time I have a problem, I'm feeding myself this. Bruce Lee had a thing saying, don't joke about yourself because your body doesn't even know what's a joke or not, right? Yeah. So the philosophy that I'm going about is, are you talking it into existence? Are you, manifesting it?
Of course you are.
So I don't understand why people, they go to a therapist or they go to medication, but they won't fix their fucking mouth first.
It's so interesting you say this, because when I say depression isn't real and it's situational and you have to change your situation to feel better, people often come back to me and say, well, what about celebrities? Because celebrities live perfect lives and they kill themselves. And I argue that with the exact point you made, because a celebrity sits there, Robin Williams, I'm depressed. And instead of people sitting down with him and saying, Robin, listen.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. You're as famous as you can get. You live the most privileged life you can live. You can have a 19-year-old girlfriend tomorrow. Let's find out what's making you sad. Let's go on safari. Let's see some tigers.
Or get rid of the shit that's making you depressed.
Completely.
There's no attack towards making progress. There's just trying to take the easy way out.
That's
one,
right.
Labeling myself.
Yep.
Sorry, guys. I can't do it today. I have anxiety.
Yep.
Or I have depression.
Yep.
Now, mind you, there might be some people out there that actually wake up and they have a lot of things on them. I think you need to find God.
Oh, absolutely.
That's it. Because if you had a God, you would know that you could cast your anxieties and depression on him.
Yep.
Now, having faith is a big thing for me. Big thing.
Yep.
If I didn't have faith, all the obstacles that I would look at, let me give you an example. When I first started the show, I was like, I don't know how, but I'm going to have this conversation with you.
Yep.
Now, fucking crazy. I came off of impulsive. Some people might not even want to do anything with me because I was the laugh that kid.
Yeah.
But I manifested and I pushed and I encouraged myself.
Yep.
I could have sat around like a pussy and be like, oh, no one's going to give a fuck about me. No one's going to do this. No one's going to do that. But if I can't care about myself, if I can't push myself,
right.
And if I can't encourage myself,
that's
who
right.
The fuck's going to come around and do that for me?
Nobody's going to care about you more than you.
Nobody's
going to wake up each morning and go, you know what? Andrew Tate only has 53 cars. He needs a 54th car. I'm going to get up and I'm going to work hard and buy him a car. No. That's my job.
Did your money make you happier? Or did it cause you more anxiety?
Okay, that's a really interesting question, which we'll talk about, actually. But everything you said about depression is super true. And Robin Williams, his mistake is that he went to a therapist who confirmed his bias, confirmed he's depressed. They then sat there and talked about being depressed 3 times a week for 2 hours a day. Then they put him on mind-altering drugs to make him feel better. And after 9 years of therapy, he jumped off a building. If I were to take mind-altering drugs and talk about being sad all day every day, I'd probably jump off a building too. So it's absolutely the wrong thing you can do. And I want to make a point here, because when I talk about depression, people always defend it. I said this. I was having a conversation with somebody.
By the way, hold on. Defending what? You have depression. I have depression. But we don't sit around fucking moping about it.
But the depressed people do. This is the interesting.
So you can't get mad at us for not going in the motion that you want to go about. You're trying to say that you're getting mad at me for saying that I don't sit in my depression.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that depression doesn't exist. I'm saying that I'm not giving it flowers. Everything is a mustard seed.
Yep.
If you water that bullshit, it's going to fucking grow.
Completely.
What I don't understand is that the reap and sow is everything that anyone does. But people will reap one thing, and then when they're sowing this bullshit, they'll be like, wait, why did I get this?
Yeah.
I'm like, because you were fucking, you planted this crop, but every single day you were talking about that crop.
Yep, absolutely, completely true. And I said this many times before. I don't believe in things that take away power from me. I don't care if depression is real. I don't care if I'm wrong. I don't believe in something that takes away power from me, because I can't become depressed if I don't believe in depression. And that allows me to shield my mind from the idea of being a depressed person. I can feel depressed temporarily, but I can never become a depressed person because it doesn't exist. You can lock me in a Romanian jail cell for 93 days with cockroaches. I will not be depressed. I will feel a little bit sad, of course, but I will never become a depressed person because I don't believe in it. And when I say this, depressed people are like, no, depression's real. It's ruined my life. It's taken everything from me. Depression's real. I said, you sound like it's promotional team.
It sounds like it's their PR team. It's their God. They're worshiping it.
You're worshiping it because it gives you a cure-all excuse for your monumental failures, as opposed to waking up and going, you know what? Maybe I'm a fuck-up. Nothing to do with depression. Maybe I've just been fucking up. Maybe depression isn't real and I've just been fucking up and I should fix a few of these things.
What have I been reaping?
Absolutely. And you'd be amazed how depression will lose power over your life and lose its ability to destroy your life if you stop giving it so much respect and just wake up and say, let me fix X, Y, and Z. What can I control?
Let me clear, just in case there's some people that might not catch up to our speed. I do not believe that some people... Sorry, let me rephrase this. I believe that some people are depressed every single day. But I believe that their steps into fixing that is, one, first and foremost, find God.
Yeah.
Immediately. Two, instead of running to somebody and expressing your problems every single day, just sitting there, just telling somebody your problems every single day, find some friends. Go to the gym. Instead of talking about your problems, talk about your goals. Talk about your dreams. Focus on something that is not negative. If there's two wolves, and I'll say this every time, I've said this a few times. There's two wolves, Andrew. One's chained up in the dark. One's chained up in the light. Which one lives?
Yeah, absolutely. The one in the light.
The one you feed.
Interesting.
So I could feed the one in the dark all day and it's going to live. And the one in the light's going to die.
Correct.
What are you focusing on?
Correct.
So I'm not saying that if you're depressed that it's in your head. I believe that you're putting it in your head. And I believe that you could fix this by your mouth. Start by taking actions and taking accountability for what you are saying. The people that are jacked go in the mirror. It sounds stupid, but it's true. Bro, look how fucking jacked I'm getting. Look how jacked I'm getting. And guess what? They start getting jacked. Why? Because they're motivating themselves to get in the gym, eat healthier. They consistently talk about their body. So when bad food gets put on their table, they're like, nah, I don't want this right now.
Yep.
It's all about your mouth. Your tongue is the sharpest thing in the world.
And then we use that in the adverse, right? You can use that the other way around. This is why I answered the light wolf, because I believe that...
Your mind is focused on it.
Absolutely. But let's use it the other way around. So you can speak yourself also positive, which we know, but I think there's a mistake that a lot of people make with that. A lot of people are obsessed with the idea of happiness. And especially as a man, I think that happiness can actually be a very destructive motivator. And when men sit and say, I want to be happy, I want to feel happy. To feel happy, a lot of the time, you're looking for temporary hedonism. To be happy, you want to get drunk or take drugs or do something stupid temporarily, and it's very short-lived. I think you should instead be looking as a man to say, I want to feel proud. If you choose pride over happiness, you're going to make decisions that you're proud of and that people around you are proud of, and it's going to be better for yourself and better for society and better for everyone who loves you, everyone you care about.
I think that's the first thing you said that I disagree with.
You disagree?
Completely.
I think the best thing a man can do is wake up and say, what can I do that's going to make me proud of myself and other people are proud of me?
Let's get into our debate.
Let's do it.
Okay. I believe that pride will always be the downfall of you. In fact, God calls it an abomination. If you stand before God and you search for anything in your heart and you take pride in it, you're saying that you did it, not God. That is my argument against that. One. Two, happiness could be today. It's all perspective.
Yeah.
If you look at a tree, you could look at it and be like, oh, me and my dad used to pick apples from that tree, or his father hung himself in that tree.
Yeah.
It's the perspective. So anything could be changed in a perspective. So if you ask from God's perspective, and God used to walk into the room and say, shalom, peace be upon you.
Yeah.
So I believe you could enter peace. I believe that you could only find peace when you welcome God into your life. Now, I might sound like a crazy nutcase that's a religious man, but I truly believe in all of my heart that money will never give you peace.
Yep.
I believe love will give you peace. Love comes from God and the people that are around you. Your mother gives you peace. Yep. Your father gives you peace. Yep. You can't buy that.
Yep.
And if you ask God for five things, only five things, Andrew, your Bugatti wouldn't be there.
Absolutely.
But your brother would.
Of course.
So you come into the world with peace and love.
But you don't think pride is one of the biggest motivators of masculine excellence? You don't think
that? No, because once you achieve it, you want more, and that's where it gets
dangerous.
Of course,
but you do not think Mayweather decided he wanted to be proud of himself by beating everyone?
Why would you want to be Mayweather?
What, okay,
so you can
Michael,
have
Michelangelo.
Money and then just pick on YouTubers and box them?
Of course. I'm not insulting Mayweather, or good or bad. But
well, actually, I might cut that because it might jump me. So
Michelangelo.
Okay. He cut his ear off.
Okay. Artists, Da Vinci. What I'm saying is some of the most beautiful works of art, some of the most gorgeous cathedrals, some of the most beautiful churches you'll ever lay your eyes on were done because a man felt proud of his work. Feeling pride in
yourself.
But
what happened to that man?
And being prideful.
So you're looking at the art and you're trying, that's pride. You want everybody to take pride into you. But guess what, Andrew? Right now, if you died, regardless of all the work you've done, regardless of all of everything that you put in, I'm a better man. Reed's a better man. Da Vinci's a better man.
Yep.
I forgot your name. I'm so sorry.
Bailey.
Bailey's a better man. All these guys are a better man for 2-3 generations. But when you die, you have the same grave of a man that you hate because time moves on.
Of course.
Everything collects moth and rust.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
You don't think God can give you pride in yourself for doing the right things?
I think that you could find joy in it. But again, everything has its time. So you take pride in your art. But at one point, all those artists became crazy, bro. So what's the fucking worth of
it? Okay, I understand that. So we can look at a bunch of different ways, but you just talked about a man looking in the mirror and being proud of his body to motivate himself. That's pride.
Absolutely. Pride to an extent, right? Pride to an extent. But if it's your motivator, that's the problem. Everybody needs a certain type of emotion. You need fear, but you're not going to live fear throughout your whole life.
We have our default emotions that we seek. And this is the point I'm making, because when I talk to people, I think we all have our default emotions we seek. And depressed people, their default emotion that they're looking for is sympathy. They want sympathy either from themselves or from somebody else. And they always have a sob story. It's always about how hard their life was and they did drugs and blah, blah, blah. And they want everyone to feel sorry for them. They're searching for sympathy. If you're the kind of person who searches for happiness, whether male or female, in my experience, people who search for happiness end up doing hedonistic, temporary, stupid things. When I find men who search to feel proud of themselves, I want people to be proud of me and I want to be proud of myself and I want to be respected. They often delay happiness. They often go through very difficult things and build things which are beautiful or build things which are difficult to do. They often go to the other side of fear to feel that pride. I did it. I faced my fear. I did it.
Yeah.
So I think as a man, searching for pride or searching to feel proud is a pretty positive mindset for masculine achievement. I understand what you're saying from the biblical sense. I actually understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I just say, if you were to take a man and say, how would you make your parents, your girlfriend, and yourself proud of you?
I agree. I just don't want it to be the driving vehicle. And that's the only thing I care about. I just don't want it to be the driving vehicle, right?
And then I have to sit here and analyze myself. Is pride the driving vehicle for me? Like, why do I even
100%
why do I even do what I do? Like, do I feel proud of myself when I awaken people to how the matrix works? Well, yes. But is that because I believe I'm helping them, or do I just feel happy in and of myself? Why do I own all the things I own? Why do I want all the things I want? And it's very interesting. You asked a question earlier before we got down this point when you said, has money made me happier or made me more anxious? And the answer to that is both. I think that you're certainly anxious when you have an empire because you understand how difficult it is to maintain, especially in my position, right? I've been hit by DCAUT and FBI and all these huge federal agencies are trying to take everything I've ever worked for.
From your loved ones that you're leaving.
And from my loved ones, all the money I've ever made. It's actually a very difficult, precarious situation to be in. And even if you ever get to the position where you pay yourself $500,000 every single morning, you get concerned with, am I still going to be able to do this? Then the money ain't making you happy. You're working so hard to make sure you'll always be able to pay yourself that money that you don't even spend, that you don't even need.
That's the pride thing I was trying to tell
you
about.
Of course, of course.
And it's a stomach that keeps needing.
It does keep needing. You're completely right. But that's also how there's no light without dark. The stomach keeps needing. Completely agree with you. But that's also how I managed to propel myself from here to here. And I'm going to go want to beat this garbage even higher. So I agree
it's
with
your
you.
Gas.
It's my gas. Yeah. My gas is. And then, so there's anxiety.
Did that change when you got a daughter?
I think in some ways it got worse because there's anxiety attached to my money. But the true happiness that I get from my money is the fact that I can give people I care about anything I want.
You could set them free.
I can set them free.
Yeah.
So I said this even to a girl I was dating. I said, you're happy all the time. And I love that because I'm stressed and I'm not complaining about being stressed. I think the masculine role is to wake up stressed. I wake up stressed. I wake up and I've got a bunch to do, a bunch of people to talk to, a bunch of money to make, etc. I'm stressed. I'm not miserable, but I'm certainly concerned all of the time. I'm focused all of the time. I'm always busy. I have a lot going on. I'm never relaxed. I'm never at peace. That's not who I am as a person.
Do you think people confuse stress with depression?
I think so. And I think that you're supposed to be stressed.
So maybe they feel what you're feeling, but you've said that it's stress, which is good. You need stress. You need to have your back up against the wall or you're going to be a lazy fuck.
Or you won't do anything.
Yes.
Absolutely.
But people might think that emotion, because they feel that emotion, that stress that's on them, and then somebody comes out of the woodwork and be like, oh, that's depression.
Yeah, which is the coward's ways out. But I actually love feeling stressed. I do best when I'm stressed.
It pushes you.
I've had 87 professional fights. For about 3 of those fights, for some reason, I wasn't nervous. And it really bothered me. I was like, why am I not nervous? I like feeling nervous. I like being stressed. I fight better. I react quicker. Have you ever been jumped? Like, you get scared if someone jumps out at you? That's when you're the fastest you've ever been.
Yep.
So I think stress is a fantastic motivator. It's a beautiful thing. But I was saying to this girl, I don't get any of the happiness you get from life. You wake up and you do your nails and you shop for Prada and you get to look gorgeous and you smile all day and you get to make a cute cupcake and you bring me the cupcake and you laugh, ha ha ha, cupcake. I'm concerned with real important things. DCAUT are trying to put me in jail. Millions of dollars have gone missing. Like, I'm dealing with real stuff. You're dealing with cupcakes.
Yeah.
But I am happy that I go through all of this so I can make you happy.
Yeah.
So my money makes
me
happy. Yeah, I'm a provider. My money makes me happy because every single person I love lives a fantastic life.
Can I ask
you
a question?
And if I have to suffer so 50 people can live content, I believe that a man should do that.
I think you have a warrior mindset, right? And you have people that you care for and you provide for. You have your brother and you have your family.
Yeah.
Do you feel like your stress comes from holding on to what you hold dear, that pride aspect of things? Like, I got to be top G. Nobody's top G. I'm top G.
You know where I actually think it comes from? I actually think it comes from because I know I've only reached 10% of what I can actually do.
Let's go, bro.
And that bothers me. And no matter how much money I'm making or how most Googled man alive, whatever, whatever, I can still identify the inefficiencies in my systems. I can still identify where more money could have been made. And money isn't that important. But like we said, money is a very simple way to measure success because it's numbers. Numbers are easy.
Yeah.
This number, that number. It's easy. What does a company do when it wants to measure the success of a company? It looks at the numbers. What does a YouTube channel do? It looks at the numbers. Numbers are easy. So if you're going to say, how do I be successful in life? Money's not everything, but it's a nice, easy way to measure because it's numbers. And then when you understand it's the time and energy of other people, you sit and go, okay, well, I have this large empire now, and I have all these people who work for me, and all these people I love, and all these people I care about, and all these children, and all this going on, and the world is getting more and more messed up, and everything's on a decline, and everything's being destroyed, and a certain number of people are going to become useless eaters, are going to be eradicated, and they're going to try and lock us all in our 15-minute cities for the climate or some garbage. That's coming in no time. How do I combat and fight all of this and protect all the people I care about? Well, I need the time and energy of others. I need an army, so I need money. So you start waking up saying, okay, $1 billion is shit, Tristan. And he's like, Andrew, we're from a single mother household and our company got valued at $1.2 billion and you own 100% of it. No, we need at least 10. And then you start getting, then I get mad. And my stress comes from the fact that I don't have enough. But is it for me or is it for just being able to care about all the people I care about?
Well, from how you described it, it seems like you're just gearing up for war. And a man who knows his next move knows his next problems.
Yep.
So I think you're four steps ahead and you're looking at eight problems.
Somebody said it.
Do you want more coffee? Or
I'd love more coffee.
Could you get two more from?
Someone said it and I can't remember who said it, but it said that finance are the, I think it was.
I'm so sorry. Could you, I know you don't have headphones on.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Finance are the sinews. I can't remember the exact saying, but he said it perfectly. He basically said that money is, if you're going to go to war, get your money right.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. What are we sending to Ukraine right now?
Money.
Billions of dollars.
That we print.
Money. What do we send to Israel? Money. Money, money, money. Right? So if I feel like I'm going to go to war, I need money. And even in this war I've been in, even when I went to jail, right? Not a lot of people understand how the legal system works, but the process itself is a punishment. The day I was arrested, all of my bank accounts were frozen. All of my cars were seized.
That's scary, dude.
Yeah, all of my cars were seized. All of my diamond watches were taken. $900,000 in cash was taken. Gold bars was taken. All of my value was taken, right? So since January, technically, I haven't had access to a dollar. It's now been a year, and I don't have a penny, according to DECOL and the Romanian legal system. Luckily, I have some good friends who look after me. But let's say...
He winked at me like I had that funds. Like,
but they
don't.
They've taken everything officially.
So you still don't have your stuff back?
No, no, of course not. So this is my
point. Why are you still here?
Well, I can't leave.
But, okay. Are you going to leave once you can? Because I feel like they just proved that you can't speak here either.
Well, that's the thing that's scary. If you can't speak here, which is the most Christian country on earth. You know, Romania, outside of Vatican City, is the most Christian country on the planet.
98%, and then the other two are like a different denomination of Christianity.
Yeah, that's right. Most Christian country on the planet. And all I'm talking about is traditional masculinity, and I got hit.
Are you upset with them for what they did, or do you feel like they had valid reasons to do what they did?
As a man, you have to take self-accountability for absolutely everything. I'm still upset with what they've done. However, there are equal opposing forces inside of Romania, one trying to lock me up and one that keeps setting me free.
And that's going to be everywhere.
Yeah. So I have people in this country on my team. The whole country's not against me or I never would have got out. So
Do you feel like they're more moving towards your direction?
This will be dropped. I'm not going to be found guilty because I haven't done anything wrong. But
and if you don't mind me asking, what did they try to pin you for?
They accused me of human trafficking. They accused me of using the lover boy method, which is convincing girls by being nice to do a job to take the money from the girls, because I told two of my friends who are girls how to get big on TikTok.
That's why all of this happened to you?
Yeah.
Did somebody else plant this on you?
Oh yeah, the Matrix.
Okay, gotcha.
You got too big. Your ability to speak, which that's a side point. Let me just finish here about when I was talking about money and gearing up for war. Since January, I haven't had access to a single dollar. Now I'm me, right? So perhaps I have very rich friends. Perhaps I was paranoid and prepared. Perhaps I have multiple identities. Who knows how I pulled it off to have all new cars again, right? But most humans could not survive getting grabbed from their house in January, all of their bank accounts frozen, every app on their phone taken away from them, their passport seized, thrown in a cell, and then taken out of that cell, locked in their house for 5 months. And then even when they're allowed out of the house, they still don't have a dollar. How do you pay the rent? How do you pay the bills? How do you feed people? And this is what's actually interesting, because when I was in jail, my number one concerns were not for me. My biggest concerns when I was in jail was for everyone I care about. Yeah. I'd get my phone time, and I'd be on the phone like, okay, and they're like, what's going on? What's going on? I'm like, listen, we only have 5 minutes.
Let me make sure you get paid.
Is this paid? Yeah. Are you okay? Do you need this? Do you need that? I just spent all my time trying to look after other people from a prison cell with seized bank accounts.
Did you think you were going to come out?
No. I thought I was there for a very long time. I thought I was stuck. I thought it was over. I was sitting there talking to people who had been there for 4 years without trial, my friend.
Everyone around me
had been there for years without trial.
When you were put on house arrest,
yeah.
Was there any moment that you cried from like happiness? It was just like, I'm out. I can't believe I'm out.
I never cried from happiness. And I never cried from sadness. Because I think crying is an act in and of itself. To cry is to sit and cry. I didn't do that. I did have tears run down my face.
Hey, man, that's crying.
No, it's not, because I was busy. Having tears run down my face as I'm doing push-ups, or tears run down my face as I'm organizing the school for my child and my voice isn't breaking, is different than sitting and crying. I didn't sit and dedicate myself to crying. I didn't sit and do the act of crying. My eyes leaked as I achieved. That's what happened to me when I was inside of jail.
What made your eyes leak the most? What was the most concern that was on your heart?
My concern was for everybody else.
The number one, though, who's the person that you were like, I need to make sure that I look good in their eyes and I need to make sure that they're good?
Of course, I can answer that my children, but my children are actually quite young, so they weren't overly concerned because at their age, you know, dad's away, whatever. I'm not entirely sure. I think it was just an overarching view of everything. And I felt a frustration because I had built this monumental empire and it got seized from me, which is a whole nother conversation we can go down when you talk about ownership and property and how the Matrix works.
You don't own anything.
Well, you never do.
I mean, you owned all this, but then they're like...
That's right. So what do you own? You own the body you're in, perhaps, but then they force you to get a vaccine, so maybe you don't own that anymore. You own your soul. You can own your thoughts, but then that belongs to God. So then what do you even own now on this planet? Because I have people say to me all the time, oh, I'd love to buy a house. And I own my house. You don't own that house. You have to pay property taxes every month. And if you don't pay them, they'll take it off you. You're renting it from the government. Piss the government off and you'll see how long you own your house. Because I tell you what's going to happen. They're going to turn up with a piece of paper and say it's ours. Done. Happened to me. So you never even own anything on this earth, no matter how much money you have, right? Which also puts money in perspective. All it is the time and energy of other people. It's all it's good for. You can buy a Bugatti, but you don't own that Bugatti. You can drive it a bit if they let you. And piss the Matrix off enough, they'll take that off you too. So the whole world, if you actually start analyzing how it all works, is interesting. But yeah, my concerns in jail were for absolutely everybody else. And that's perhaps why I'm gearing up for war so heavily, because I believe that this war can't be avoided. And a lot of people ask me, why with my money do I not do one of two things? Which is one, vanish. Because I could just delete everything and shut up, right? I could just go away.
But that's not you.
That's not me. And I think that God would be disappointed in me. So I think God's given me this platform to tell the truth, so I'm going to do it. Or the second thing is I could sell out to the system. I could cut.
It's also not you.
It's not me. I could sell to the system, say what they want me to say, promote the things they want me to promote, sell shit to kids, be a piece of shit, and then they'll let me live.
But then you just remove the only thing that you do own, and it's your soul.
Absolutely.
And you don't want them to take that away.
No, exactly. I need to keep something.
Yeah.
So it ain't worth giving that up for a bit more money because I have unlimited money anyway.
Yeah, but plus, every time you swipe that card when you're gone, you're like, fuck my life, dog. This is anything.
Oh, completely. What do you have if you don't look in the mirror and be like, yeah, I did the right thing, then what do you even have?
Oh, boom. Not pride, but integrity.
Okay. Well, we could link the two. You look in the mirror and be proud of yourself. But it's interesting. No, but it's interesting the points you've made. It's given me something to think about. It's certainly true. But... that's why I'm gearing up for war so heavily, because this war, when people ask me why I don't try and avoid it in the two ways we just described, I don't think most people understand that this war is coming for everyone. It can't be avoided. You're either going to become someone like me who's fighting against it, the counterculture, or you're going to buy into it and be a victim of it. I don't think any man who wakes up and accepts the garbage that the Matrix tells them, that yeah, it's okay to be depressed, like we just talked about. Yeah, you should be running around doing perkies and Adderall and consuming porn and sleeping with a bunch of hoes. And yeah, go to school and get an education and get in debt and then go get a mortgage and get in debt and then 9 to 5 and just slave away and you'll be retired when you're 74. It's going to be fine. All the things they push, all the standardized mechanisms that a man's supposed to live his life by, I believe, lead to crippling depression and sadness anyway. I don't think that makes anyone happy. So this war is twofold. You can either fight against the system and be its enemy, like I am, or you can accept the system, and then you're going to be fighting against yourself in your head, because now you're your own enemy, because you listen to the system and you hate yourself and you hate your life. Yeah. So what do you want to do? If you can't avoid fighting, do you want to turn on yourself or do you want to turn on your enemy? Every single part of me is on my team. My mind, my hands, my feet, everything, my teeth, you name it. If it goes to war, I've got every single weapon at my disposal. So when people say to me, why am I fighting this war? I say, you're in the war too. You're just going to be a casualty of it. You're going to be a forgotten name. Not even a name. You're going to be a number. In wars, it's interesting. In wars, if you look at any war, they'll talk about 12,000 people died here. And one of them was this guy. There's names and there's numbers. So if you're going to go to war, you can decide, do you want to be a name or a number? Because people are going to die. People are going to die regardless. And this is why I teach the things I teach. I say to men, listen, you need to become as strong as possible. You need to make a bunch of money. You need to prepare. You need to have 7 passports in 7 different countries. And you just start sitting there getting paranoid and panicking and getting things done. This is why I push masculine excellence. Because when they come for you, when they come for us all, if you have no weapons to defend yourself, you're going to be one of the 12,000 in the ditch.
So you're going to need numbers.
At least when they kill me, they know who they killed. At least they'll say they killed 12,000 men and Andrew Tate.
Yeah.
At least I get that. You have to aim for something. But this war can't be avoided, and everyone at home doesn't seem to realize
that. Here's the thing that, like, I'm going to put you a little bit at ease and scare you at the same time.
I'm ready.
They killed Jesus, dude. You know what I mean? Like, if you think about it, they killed God.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, he wanted it to happen. Thank God he did. Yeah. But here's the craziest part. Hey, man, this is the way of life.
Oh, absolutely.
This is the way of life. And I don't sit around anymore, and I don't fear it. And when you talk about pride, and you talk about all the stuff that we were talking about, I found this new confidence where I walk in a room and I just own it immediately. And it's a new way of thinking. My confidence comes with the Lord. Every room I walk into, this meeting, I said, God, you go before me.
Yep.
You take my tongue. You take my mind. Yep. You take my body.
Yep.
When you walk into a room and you have this type of faith, hypothetically, say I'm an idiot.
Yep.
Say I am completely a nutcase.
Yep.
I guarantee you I outworked the old George that didn't have that faith.
Oh, absolutely. And you can also apply the same to fighting. Like if you look at the Islamic fighters, they say, all glory to God. God's already decided. I'm just going to go in there. They're so calm.
Yeah, that's... And by the way, that's scary, dude.
Super scary.
Yo, if you walk into a dude and he's just super calm, that's...
Yeah, it doesn't care.
Fuck all that. I don't even want to be here anymore.
Absolutely. Yeah, like if I were to agree and if I were to do a fight now, I know that it's in God's hands. So I'd be as calm. I'd be nervous, of course, and I'd want to be nervous. But I'd know, like, look, this is in God's hands. God's already decided. Allah is the best of planners. He will decide if I need to win and destroy this man or if I need to lose and learn a lesson. Then it's
but
up to God.
That's working off of fear, not faith. What? Faith is so beautiful when you could use it, and fear is such a poison, bro. And I don't know if you've really hung out with people that have fear. It's an addictive personality.
Oh, it's sticky.
It's very sticky.
Yeah.
Very sticky. Have you ever watched something on TikTok or Instagram and then all day you're just thinking about it and you're like, this motherfucker can't leave my brain, dude.
Yeah.
I am now limiting myself on what I'm absorbing.
Bro, I don't talk. I want to make this very clear. One of the best things about money is I've managed to create my reality absolutely. I don't talk to anyone I don't want to talk to. If you come to me and say, we can make $100 million, but I don't like your shirt, then you can get fucked. That's my life now, because I don't need money and I don't like you. So that's who I am, right? So I've created my reality absolutely. And the number one thing I will not do is talk to negative people. I don't want to hear, I don't care what your story is. I don't care what happened. If all you do is complain, you are not around me, because it is sticky. It's sticky to you. It's sticky to the universe. It leaves a residue. I don't want to hear it. Everyone around me is happy. And not only happy, we're the kind of people, if we're in a trench and we're getting shelled, we're laughing.
Yep.
We're like, missed. That's who we are. Bro, they just hit me with the largest Matrix attack on the planet. I should be destitute and disappeared. Here I am on your podcast. I just pulled up in a brand new sports car. I'm like a cockroach. And you drop the nuke to kill everyone. And the cockroach crawls out with Top G on the back. It's all hilarious, bro. It's a joke. Human trafficking for TikTok. The whole thing's a joke. But here I survive. So you have to be that person. And even my brother and I in jail, sometimes we just look at each other. We'd be sitting there in jail. And sometimes we'd look at each other and just burst out laughing. Like, this is so ridiculous. But I don't have time for negative people. And especially when negative people come out with their sub stories, I guess I'm kind of fortunate that God has put me through so many difficult things. When people tell me their sub stories, I'm sitting there going, is that it? You're a fuck up because of that? You should have seen what I had to do. Like, so I don't even want to hear it. I'm not interested in it. And you're right. You have to be careful who you're around because you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with.
Yeah. You are who you hang out with. Dude, there's a reason why God says sheep.
Yeah.
We're sheep.
Yep.
We're all sheep. Bro, I don't need to bring up my past, but my behaviors were intolerable because of the people around me.
Oh, absolutely.
You are who you hang out with. My father would tell me that all the time. He'd be like, hey, cut it out, bro. Yep. You need to stop hanging out with these people that are bringing you down.
You know what's interesting about that point before we move on? It's really interesting that people understand. I've never met somebody who disagrees with the point. You are the person who you spend, you are the sum of the people you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
Everyone agrees with that. But then they hang around with dickheads.
Well, you know
why? Where's the disconnect between those two points?
Because people like for other people to feel bad for them. They hang on to that. That's their identity.
Sympathy.
Yeah, it's their identity.
What's their favorite emotion? Sympathy, like we said earlier, their favorite emotion is sympathy. They're looking for sympathy. That's what they want. That's what makes them feel good. That's their favorite food. You have to choose what your favorite food is. My favorite food, I'll be honest with you, and I actually respect, and you give me a lot to think about. And without being arrogant, at my echelon, it's not often I sit down with somebody and they say something that makes me think. But you've given me something to think about, and genuinely, I'm going to think about it. But my favorite food is pride. I don't know if that's a bad thing, but I love when my woman comes to me and goes, you know what? You just fix everything. They had you in jail, Andrew. You were supposed to be done. They're lying about you all over the MSM. They're saying you're human trafficker. They stole all your money. They froze all your banks. Why am I on a jet with roses? Because I'm the top G. That's why. Because I'm that guy. She's like, you've just never failed. I've never seen you fail. So correct. I do not fail.
I have something to tell you. And it's randomly, I just learned about this, and it fits you so well.
Sure.
I read it again in the Bible. There's going to be so many people that are like, but yeah, I don't give a shit.
No, but that's what the knowledge is. My grandma is from Alabama, and she's a strict Christian. And she's from Alabama, like down the sticks, middle of dirt mud Alabama. And she, one of my aunts is a lawyer. And I remember my aunt, sorry to interrupt you.
I love this.
My aunt had a big court case coming up. And she'd spend half her time studying the case and half her time studying the Bible. And I remember being in her house. I must have been about 7 or 8 years old. And my mother asked her name is Liz. Liz, why are you reading the Bible so often? And she said, because that's where all the answers are.
Amen.
Yeah. So it's good wisdom, that you keep referencing man. It. Yeah.
Like, I reference it because if I reference myself, I'm just leading you down a shit path.
Yeah.
And a lot of people get so annoyed. Like, you think you're so holier than thou. You think you're perfect. Then you're not listening to me.
Yeah.
I'm a filthy dummy. And I'm trying to get myself out of it.
Yeah.
Matthew asks Jesus, I don't get it, man. Why are you talking to them in parables? And Jesus says, because you were given access to understand. So check this out. You just said, now I'm thinking about the pride thing. I think that you weren't supposed to think about the pride thing. I think God needed you to think this way. But I think now you're moving on to a different season.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think you might need to reevaluate your tactics.
And we change every day.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of trials and tribulations and conversations. And that's the whole point of perspicacity in the first place. A lot of people lack it. Feedback is such an important thing. And feedback comes from life and from all areas. And we actually talked about this. I talked about this inside of my war room. I've got the private organization, the war room, where people can join, and it's a masculine network. It's kind of like a boys club, kind of like guys, and we talk about making money and fitness and all these other things. But we were speaking, and a couple of the high level war room guys said, Andrew, I want to learn to speak like you do. The way you talk on podcasts is why they're so monumentally successful. I want to speak like you do. How do you practice? How often do you practice? And I tried to explain to him, I said, brother, you're 42 years old, I'm 36 years old. You've been speaking longer than me. So it's not about practice. The difference between you and I is I pay attention and I make sure that I get feedback. So if I do a podcast, I will watch it back and write down every time I made a mistake or every time I could have used a different word. I will sit there and actually analyze my work to get better.
You reflect.
I reflect. If you don't reflect and you just speak, you stay shit.
Reed told me, he goes, I've never met a man. And by the way, I didn't even notice about this. Like, Have you ever seen like something you do all the time, you just don't even notice it.
Yeah.
And then somebody tells you and it fucks you up. You're like, oh, damn, dude, I do that. Yeah. I over-reflect a lot.
Yep.
But here's the thing, dude. I realized this. As soon as he mentioned this to me, I realized how other motherfuckers do not reflect.
At all.
At all. They'd rather watch other people then watch their fucking mouth, bro.
That's right. Video
where Jack Dorsey had a security guard and Everybody was so mad at my opinion on it. Here's the thing, dude. Bad things happen. If you get punched in the face because of a security guard, yeah, he's wrong for that.
Yeah.
But why the fuck are you talking up to a dude 8 times your size when he's angry?
Yeah.
Do you have no common sense?
Of course.
Have you never been punched in the face before?
100%.
You didn't try to de-escalate it. You were talking and getting mouthy.
That's right.
Some people need to get hit in the face for them to understand.
Abrasive.
Yeah.
It's true. Some people only learn the hard way, especially men. God gives us, God's actually very nice, because I believe God gives us a whole bunch of chances to learn a lesson the easy way.
It's called life.
Of course. He'll give you, think of the harshest lesson. You don't even have to say what it is, but think of the harshest lesson you've had in the last few years. And think of how many times you had the easy way to learn that lesson. You could have just stopped being a dickhead before it got bad.
Like that.
Think how many times you could have just woke up and go, nah. Yeah. But we don't, do we?
Nope.
We wake up like, we got away with it. It's fine. And then bam, you get hit. There's only two ways to learn lessons, hard and harder. If you're smart, you take it the hard way. Real idiots take it the hardest way.
Yeah.
But there's no easy way to learn lessons. So you're right. I agree with everything you say. And that's how God teaches anyway. That's how God is always going to teach, because God is a disciplinarian love. I think it says, someone said this to me, I think in school you learn things and then you're given a test. But with God, you're given the test and then you learn things. And that's the way it works. That's why I was even in jail in the first place. That's what I was there for, to learn. That's why I went.
You're being sharpened.
Of course, I'm being sharpened. And you said earlier about me moving on to a new stage, a new evolution, and I hope that is true. I hope that the 50-year-old version of me thinks the 36-year-old version of me was an idiot.
I think he's going to be a lot more calmer.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I like to consider myself pretty smart, so if I'm even smarter, that's great. We'll see how it goes. Maybe I will be calmer. But it's all about reflection and self-reflection and looking back, and that's what we were saying earlier, because most people do not self-reflect on their actions ever. And you nailed it with the reap what you sow. And they don't understand why they end up where they end up. And they think it's someone else's fault.
They're like, I can't get anywhere in life. I'm like, yeah, because you work your 9 to 5. When you come home, you smoke weed and play PlayStation.
Why does everyone hate me? Because you do dumb shit and you make bad decisions.
People want the glory but no work.
Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah.
Not just the glory and no work. They want the glory and no heat. I'll tell you something, man. If you ever end up, and I pray that you don't, in a precarious legal situation, you'll see all the people who want to hang around you when you're famous and when you can get girls, when you can go out and when you can pay bills, all that, they want to hang around for that.
Mm.
But the second their name gets brought up in this heat that you're in, they don't want the heat. No, people want the good. People want the good without the bad.
Hey man, everybody has a Judas.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yep.
Tell me about
and
it.
And you know what you said, I pray I'm not in it. I pray I'm in anything that God wants me to be a part of.
And you'll survive. Because your mind's right.
Yeah. Your father used to talk about death a lot.
Yep.
God forbid something does happen to you.
Yeah.
What do you want to be known for?
Firstly, I would never kill myself. I'd like to make that clear. I would never kill myself.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, I'm like, I never said you would.
No.
But you're stating that just in case.
I would never kill myself.
Gotcha.
Under any circumstances, no matter what they say. And I think I'll be remembered for somebody who was brave, because I know the danger I'm in if I continue to talk. And when I say this, just like when I used to say about the Matrix and how they lie to us all during COVID, people didn't believe me. I want people to understand the situation I am currently in. I am the most popular person on the planet amongst the masculine youth, which is the most feared demographic of any country, of any nation. You need them heavily psyoped for a few reasons. One, if a bunch of masculine youth get together, it's not a demonstration, it's a revolution. That's the first thing. If women start complaining with picket boards, it's a demonstration. If masculine youth get together, it's a revolution.
Then you're dangerous because you don't even have a country.
Correct. All of them. Across the country.
Shit.
Across the world.
So they probably thought you were a terrorist.
Well, I could be. And that's what they're afraid of. So let's continue. So I have the number one demographic the Matrix needs to psyop. One, because of the revolutionary thing. Two, because you need them. They're the backbone of the slave force. You need them to build the roads. You need them to do the real work for low pay. They're the backbone of the slave force. They do the worst, hardest jobs for the shittest money, and they're the most depressed and most unhappy, and the women don't want to date them because they ain't got a Lambo, and they're sitting there depressed and unhappy, working their ass off, paying their taxes. You need those men psyoped. You don't want me coming along saying there's another way. And third, you need them to die in the military. You need these people. And I'm sitting here speaking to the exact people they don't want me speaking to. UK schools have banned me. My name cannot be mentioned in school in the UK, or you get detention, you get punished.
What are you talking
about? My name can't be banned. Google Andrew Tate banned English schools. In England, if a child or a student says my name, they are reprimanded.
That doesn't make sense to me. How is there so much garbage in the world that is legitimately evil? And you could talk about it. Let me give an example. I don't think any man or woman should ever have the right to have their voice be taken. Let me give an example. I love Jesus.
Yeah.
But if somebody came up to me, flicked me off and be like, F your God, blah, 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 this is that. Guess what? Hey, man, that's okay.
Yeah.
You have every right to say that.
Yeah.
So how did you get, how is it even allowed?
Well, that's the thing. So we go down this path and we talk about how...
How is the mass not seeing that? That's a huge problem.
Well, this is the thing. And this is why I talk about the fact that I'm afraid of assassination and some people think I'm exaggerating. I'm banned from being discussed in British schools. They feel like my name being mentioned in and of itself is detrimental and they ban my entire name. The problem is this. If I have huge control over the masculine youth, which the Matrix fear, I'm banned from schools. I'm discussed in UK Parliament as a problem. You get to a certain point, and there is a level you can reach which is considered a national security threat. You just said terrorism. Mm. National security threats. Do you know what happens once you're deemed a national security threat? All bets are off.
Yeah, they're going to murder you.
Oh, all bets are off. If you're a national security threat, they just shoot you. If a terrorist turns up, what do? You shoot him, right? So I'm teetering on the edge of national security threat, and I'm trying very hard not to. I'm going on podcasts and talking about God, motivation, doing the right thing, working hard, respecting your parents, loving your woman. I'm talking about all the good things, but I'm in this situation now where I'm so immensely popular. When I was in jail, people started planning demonstrations and riots, and I was like, no, don't do that. If people start burning buildings, they're never going to let me out.
Yeah.
They're going to keep me in there forever. Like, no, just write emails happily. Like, just stop.
Happily, too. Happily.
But it's true. You know, it's scary.
But also, you want to teach men how to do it the right way. And I think when people are like, we got to fight for this cause, let's burn this lady's car.
Yeah.
To me, that's ridiculous.
Of course.
I don't know how we even got to a place where rioting is even a thing
This is another thing that's scary about power and influence, right? If I were to send a message on Twitter right now with a location and say, I'm going to be there in 2 days, with no promotion, no money, I wouldn't have to build a sexy video, nothing. There would be thousands and thousands of boys there. Is there one idiot? Probably. Mm. Is there one moron? I bet. Of course there is. There's a more of you. You get a group of anybody, you're going to get one moron. Yeah. If that moron does something wrong, and he's been at my rally a few weeks before, whose fault is it?
Dude, I just said this, and I got smoke for saying this. When Kai had his meetup, I wasn't angry at Kai, but I was trying to let them know that famous people nowadays have a little bit more access because we could just go straight to the phone. Yeah. If you're in the 90s, TV shows, you watch them on the sitcom. But now because we could just dial right into your phone, if Kai goes, hey, I'm going to be in New York. Now, he never said burn New York. He never said break the cars. Yeah. He never told anybody to do that. In fact, he wanted to just show up and have a great time with the people that love him.
Yeah.
He had a great heart for it.
Yeah.
But he has to take responsibility for that because none of those problems would have happened if he didn't tweet, I'm going to be there.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? So you have that level of responsibility to a degree is scary. And Kai, he's young, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's young, yeah.
But by the way, great kid. Yeah. And people were getting so mad and saying that I'm a huge fan of Kai.
Yeah, yeah.
I love his content. Yeah. I love his heart. Every time I see him, he has a great smile. And he's a great soul. I was just saying, you have to be, with great power comes what?
Great responsibility.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah, no, and you're completely right. So then you have to tie all that in. So I am scared about the fact that someday someone's going to say, you know what, this guy's causing too much problems or he has too much influence. Can he just...
Why would they
do that
already?
Can he just crash his car? Can his jet just crash? Can we just get rid of this guy? Because it fixes a lot of issues. And then you have to sit and say, is my life worth more than the trouble I'm causing to these people? They don't give a shit about me. They don't give a shit about anybody. So you do get to a position where it's scary. And then you have to sit and decide, well, do I want to sell my soul to the devil and cuck? Or do I want to just shut up and disappear, which is also cucking? Or do you want to live for something? And do you want to die as a name as opposed to a number? And I've made that decision, and I'll continue to do what I believe is best. But I think that also, and I want to say this here, I think it's the first time I've said it, I don't want to take too much credit, but I do believe the Matrix is cracking. I do believe now we live in a internet where you can say things you couldn't say 2 years ago, where information is different.
Pendulum.
Oh, it's swinging. It's swinging. And I feel like I'm a huge part of that.
Dude, I'm not here to gas you up, because then I just look like the guy is sucking up to you. Again, there's a lot of things we disagree on, so I'm not sucking up to you.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody had the balls that you had.
Oh, absolutely. I went guns blazing at them, at the Matrix. And I said, I went guns blazing at them. And I said on an earlier podcast, I said, this is a three-stage plan. The Nelk boys asked me, and they said, you became the most famous man in the world. You became the most Googled person on the planet. Every single TikTok video is you. Why did you do this? I said, this is a three-stage plan. Stage one was to become the most known person on the planet, and stage two was to get canceled. That's how you put a crack in the dam, for everybody to know who I am, and then know I'm canceled and try and find me somewhere else. And
Oh shit. So you wanted to get canceled to show that that doesn't even matter.
And I'm now bigger than ever before.
So technically, dude, this song has been sung before when Jesus died and then came back.
Well, there's also
And by the way, I'm not comparing you to Jesus. No, I want everybody to make sure.
This song has also been sung. I don't know if it was Aristotle or Socrates. It was one of them who was assassinated for corrupting the masculine youth. So this song has also been sung. One of them, I can't remember which one, was put to death because they said he corrupted the masculine youth because he told them not to join the army. So it's scary, right? But part two was to get canceled because I believed when I came up with this whole idea, when I sat there and I became religious because I realized there's so much evil in the world, God must exist. You can't equal and opposite force.
Light has darkness.
And I see so much pure evil, the devil must be real, which means God must be real. And I sat there and I decided, please remember, before I became massively overtly famous, I already had plenty of money. I didn't need money. I didn't need to do any of it. When I came up with my plan and I worked with the War Room, and we put together a one-year plan to become the most famous man on the planet, and I pulled it off and I did it. And my plan was to get canceled. And the reason was because I knew that the Matrix had, the dam had a bunch of pressure behind it. Everyone was tired of the censorship. But when you get canceled, you vanish. And I said, there's so much pressure behind the dam. The crack it needs is for someone to get canceled and stay relevant or become more relevant than before.
Damn.
Then people won't be afraid of getting canceled anymore. So then they'll start to talk. And when I got canceled and then I went moved to Rumble and I put together the whole big Rumble thing and I put together my final message and I said my unmatched perspicacity coupled with sheer indefatigability makes me a feared opponent in any realm of human endeavor. And I sat down with Patrick Pet David and I said, they fucked up. They shouldn't have deleted me. They sitting around thinking they've got rid of me. They made a mistake. And then the Matrix got pissed off. I got bigger. So they threw me in jail, which made me bigger. So like all of
so maybe that's why they don't want to assassinate you, dude.
But that's the final solution.
I know, but
I shut up.
But think about all the people that get assassinated, bro.
Like, they become Mars. You know, it's interesting. I won't say who, but a very famous and very intelligent right-wing commentator said to me when I was talking to him about all of this, and he agreed with every single word I said. He said, the only way out is through. You have to get so big they're scared to kill you. It's the only way, or they're going to get rid of you. If you stay in the middle, you're going to go. You have to get so big that killing you will cause the problems they don't want you to cause alive.
Have you ever read Job?
No.
Job is a man, and the devil comes up to him, and he goes, of course, he worships you. You gave him everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And God goes, okay, fine, go test him, but you can't take his life. You can do anything you want.
Ah, this is, I think, carry on.
Can't take his life. Yeah. And he does. And so the tactic is, we got to remember that life is held in God's hands,
yep.
Not the devil's hands.
Yep.
So this whole entire demons or these matrix or anything that they want, as much as powerful as we all think they are,
yep.
They only move when God wants them to move.
I agree with
you. And when I came to this industry, my mom said one thing because I was scared. I was scared of the Illuminati. I was scared of all this stuff. Yep. And my mom hit me with a reference that had to do with my industry.
Yep.
And she goes, if God says action, who has the authority to say cut?
I love that.
You want to take a quick smoke break and then come back? Because I have to pee really bad. And sure. I haven't even touched my notes.
Let's do it.
Okay. Oh, God. I drink so much water.